Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I see we didn't get any music. Normally, we try to have a little introduction, if you will. But my co-host, Don Allen, won't be with us this evening. I received a call from him about an hour ago, and apparently his flight was late getting back in. He said he was just absolutely swamped, and he had been traveling, if you will. We were looking forward to opening our phone lines this evening, but we will not be able to do that, and I'm sad about that because I've had so many calls on three specific situations that is going on in our city, but we still have the platform to make sure the message gets out to our listening audience, both locally, internationally, and et cetera. First of all, I want to thank those of you who did raise some questions to me over the week. I assume that Mr. Allen, though he said he was out of the city, received some text messages, calls, and et cetera, and it had to do with the program last week, which we thought was an excellent one, in which we had the county's new, Hennepin County, our county here, new diversity program executive director, Alex Tittle. Mr. Tittle spent, an entire hour with us, and we really want to say to him and to the county, appreciate them allowing him that amount of time and laying out and explaining the things that he expects to be able to do for the county, as he did, he said, for the People's Stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, a $1.3 to $4 billion project, if you will. For those of you that are football fans, during Super Bowl, that was the big palace that you saw that game played in. There were some questions that were asked of me. A couple of folks called. We had calls from Phoenix, Arizona, Los Angeles, Dallas, Texas, Houston, asking us for clarification about a statement that Mr. Tittle made, and they were a little confused that Mr. Tittle was saying that that both Mr. Allen and myself had served as consultants to Hennepin County, where he is now employed. And I explained that that he was asking the question and indicating that my associate, Mr. Allen, has been serving as a consultant to Hennepin County on, I guess, a number of projects. I should have asked specific questions about, you know, what projects my associate worked on with the county, but I thought actually that Mr. Tittle had raised that question with us, that he would kind of explain further, or my associate, Mr. Allen, would explain, but it didn't happen. I apologize because we certainly want to be as transparent as popular, and one of you, I think it was from Phoenix, asked me the question, do I have any consulting contracts and et cetera? I have never had any, don't have any now, and don't expect to have any. That's just not my style for any number of reasons, particularly in an enclave in a city and a state like Minnesota. But I hope that clears it up for the caller that texted me and raised that question from Phoenix, Arizona. I will not discuss the names of the individuals. Apparently, they lived here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and had some concerns about, you know, transparency and et cetera. But I hope I clear that up, that Mr. Tittle was identifying my associate, Mr. Allen, as having consultant contracts with Hennepin County. For what period, I have no idea, and I'm quite sure that when Don is back on the air with us next week, next following week, or whatever, that Don will certainly clear that up, and I'm quite sure some folks will call and ask us about it. The other issues that we have that are of great concern, and I, again, appreciate calls coming in, and this was fascinating, Carl's coming in from Omaha, Nebraska, from a young lady who is an attorney who happened to be in our city on the occasion of a very serious vehicular crash and homicide, if you will, there on Lowry and Penn Avenue in North Minneapolis. And being an attorney, dealing with personal injury and et cetera, she did raise the question about some inconsistencies, and her relatives here had taped the podcast by me yesterday on MTN. That's the Minneapolis Television Network. We also now do live podcasts for our many listeners, audience, friends, and supporters, if you will. And they appreciated certainly the detail that I gave yesterday on that podcast, and that television program will air here on Sunday at regular time, as we've been airing for 27 years, if you will, on MTN. That's the Minneapolis Television Network. I know many of you know where to find it, how to find it, and et cetera. But I appreciated the attentiveness, because right after that call from this attorney, African-American, who was visiting our city, I received a call from two gentlemen who were visiting here and, in fact, apparently were in the vicinity of this tragedy in which two lives were lost, two other people were hospitalized, and controversy has broken out with regards to if it was a police pursuit. The police are, of course, saying that it was not a pursuit. We are aware that there are many of you, probably 20 to 25 African Americans, who no statements were taken from, by the way, who clearly indicate a chase that started at 24th and Queen in North Minneapolis was clearly a police pursuit. And we will, 15 minutes as we go back over the narrative, if you will, we will explain in great detail. The final issue at basically the second half of tonight's program from the Twin Cities, the Ron and Don program, will be apparently a lack of confidence by the mayor of our beloved city, Jacob Fry, and the current police chief, who is really a very good friend, a very, very decent man, Nadella Arredondo, as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. And we are very concerned as a journalist, historian, and et cetera, that rumors are now floating about that Chief Arredondo, who's only been on the job about 5 months, that his employment and his continued position of chief of the Minneapolis Police Department is in danger. And we will talk in terms of specific details. As we said before, we're sorry that we're not able to open our phone lines. Our technical person, who is my associate, Mr. Allen, you know, as I said, has indicated that he is swamped on some other matters and will not be able to be with us tonight. For those of you that are getting the message clearly, if you will, feel free to dial the number that you have for this commentator. Just to give me a quick beep to let me know that the message is coming through, if you will, because these are very, very fragile and sensitive times here in our beloved city, particularly in the entire arena of public safety, if you will. And so now we move to the events of this past Friday here in our beloved city in North Minneapolis, in and around the area of Lowry and Penn Avenue, there where the liquor store is located, houses, apartment buildings, and et cetera. At around 8:15, 8:17 on last Friday, if you will, the 9th of June, a high-speed chase took place. It started out like this. in the vicinity of 24th and Queen, maybe a block down closer to West Broadway, a African-American gentleman was driving in his car, and he was hit by a van being driven by a Caucasian woman whose name has been finally identified in the Minneapolis Star Tribune on yesterday, today being Wednesday. The individual who hit the African-American gentleman fled at a high rate of speed. He was in total control of his faculties. He immediately got on his cell phone, called 911. That call has, you know, certainly been vetted in a number of different ways. It was one of the questions that the young female attorney from Omaha, Nebraska, raised to me in a conversation over the last couple of days about the issue of attempting to suppress the liability issues that the city faces in the vehicular death of a Mr. Odom, Terrence Odom of Chicago, Illinois, who had moved here to the city of Minneapolis, if you will. Well thought of African-American gentleman. He's a mechanic by trade, well-liked, well-respected, if you will. It took some time, by the way, to notify his family of his death, if you will. We weren't quite understanding about that. He had identification with him and et cetera, and was known to a number of individuals, particularly the people in the house, in the backyard where he died, quickly, suddenly, and et cetera. But chase started. The African-American gentleman was pursuing the automobile that had hit him and caused damage to his vehicle, if you will. And in the vicinity of 27th and Russell, this is for those of you that know your city, if you will, know North Minneapolis and et cetera, police officer who was not on patrol duty, in fact, he was a gang unit, officer, if you will, in plain clothes, driving a plain automobile, a black automobile that has been seen quite a bit in North Minneapolis, dealing with the drug problem, if you will, arresting and stopping and putting down on the ground young African Americans and others. So, you know, the car, if, in fact, that was in chase of our the Caucasian female and her friend, who, of course, is now unfortunately also deceased, was being pursued by police officer, the officer with the gang task force, which had immediately been deployed because there was a high-speed chase, and initially people were speculating that it must have been gang warfare, if you will. Negroes were shooting at each other, et cetera. That is not true. That is not what happened. A gentleman's car had been hit. There had been a hit and run. He was able to see the driver of the automobile. He saw that it was a Caucasian woman who had been frequenting the neighborhood and had been involved in some drug trafficking and et cetera, if you will. Maybe that's why she's now, according to yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that this Caucasian woman is under police guard at North Memorial Hospital in the small suburb of Robbinsdale, which is right next to North Minneapolis and et cetera. The officer, though, as he turned his car around, he maintained that the two cars went by him at a high rate of speed. He spun, turned, U-turn, and closed on the African-American, stopping that car and letting the second automobile continue to speed at a high rate of speed, some indicating as much as 70 to 80 miles an hour, if you will. And as we continue this narrative, you will get a better idea of what it is we are talking about and why we said it based on the numerous witnesses that we have interviewed, if you will, in the last number of days. The officer stopped the African-American, demanded to know why he was speeding. The gentleman in question had himself pretty well covered, and thank God for that, given, how African-Americans can lose their life. Young African-American lost his life last night in an American city, shot in the back by a white police officer in a Western city. But back to the situation here. And so as the officer was vetting the African-American gentleman whose car had been hit in a hit-and-run, a call came over that a automobile, kind of fitting the description of the one that the officer saw during the course of his chase, three automobiles, in other words, it was electronically said to me, he buckled up, which was kind of an interesting statement, and took off. Now, this took him back towards 24th and Queen, and it is important that many of you listen very closely to this because it has all the world to do with the rejection of many African Americans and maybe even some others of other persuasions, but that definitely we have identified at least 20 to 25 African Americans who clearly enunciated, clearly said that the car that engaged the automobile of the white female was a unmarked police car at 24th and Queen. For whatever reason, even though that's called Tangletown, she had gone back down into that area, and one of the reasons was, according to the Minneapolis Star and Tribune, yesterday's edition, the Tuesday edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, there was a third white female in the vehicle, and I would surmise driver of the van, if you will, had gone back to try to see if she could pick up her buddy, her friend, if you will. Consequently, the gang unit undercover car seeing that automobile once again, that begins to clear up the mystery of how they were kind of going in circles. The unmarked SWAT car immediately engaged. It was he and her, if you will. We have reason to believe, as a journalist, if you will, and a historian, that the gang unit officer who was driving by himself after buckling up had recognized the van as one that is frequently in neighborhood, if you will, involved in drug activity. It'd be the real reason that the driver of the car responsible for the deaths of two individuals, a passenger in her vehicle, and Mr. Odom, Terrence Odom of Chicago, New York, formerly late of Minneapolis, Minnesota. So the cars began to hurtle northward, if you will, going through alleys and streets, and really it's only about a five-block run, if you will. At some time around what would be 8:18 p.m. Central Daylight Saving Time, the cars came out of an alley behind the hardware store and the Laurie Cafe there on Penn and the Laurie Cafe facing Laurie. The street in which the cafe has derived its name. Witnesses we spoke to, a Pacific gentleman, if you will, whose name we will not reveal given the sensitivity of what happens and how many unsolved homicides we have here in our beloved city, if you will, was standing in an apartment building and had an opportunity to be looking southward across Laurie, and saw two vehicles moving at a high rate of speed going across Laurie, if you will, at a intersection in which the manual stop signs had been placed up he, the witness, the man who knows the neighborhood, if you will, indicated if anyone had been stopped at that stop sign, that manual stop sign, they would have been killed instantly. But the two cars hurtled through, coming across out of the construction area, and then at approximately level or even with the doorway that the African-American gentleman was standing looking at the chase coming towards him, the van, the caravan being driven by the Caucasian woman who survived the crash actually began to go airborne, if you will. That truck moved in a direction of another 10 to 12 feet, if you will, fully airborne, hit a utility pole, a wooden utility pole, splitting that pole in half, traveling at almost 70 to 80 miles an hour, if you will, with the police unmarked squad car on her tail. Now, you have to understand, they are now coming out of the alley. They're into a construction zone, and, of course, you have a lot of gravel and such things as that, and the officer is driving a, quote-unquote, you know, again, undercover car that did not have the weight, as an example, as the caravan SUV, which was going airborne. At that point, the witness saw her airborne, if you will. He saw it hit the post. He saw it land, but he was not sure. He saw dust and gravel and particles and et cetera. But then he noticed something that made him make a decision to get back further into the building that he was in. And that was that the undercover police car had squealed to a stop, if you will, about approximately, and we marked this off, approximately 18 yards from the post that the caravan hit, and that if the officer had not been able to apply his brakes and whatever else, could have very well plowed into that particular scene. Now, move about 10 yards from the back of this apartment building to a very nice little community waiting pond where little children of color and others are waiting. Now, by the way, that particular night we had temperatures in the 90s. It was hot and humid, if you will. That was to follow the next day and the day after that. So there were children and et cetera. That waiting pond, with a clear view of all things present, the parking lot of the liquor store, the backyard where Mr. Odom was to die instantly, if you will. The wife of the father of the children, she was talking to her husband. We want to be concise and precise, because this entire program is committed and dedicated to these events and the cover-up that is now in place. She heard noise. She heard high rates of speed, gravel, and such things. But looking over her husband's shoulder as they were there with their children in the waiting pond there behind the apartment building, behind the United States Post Office, if you will, she saw and heard things that called her attention, and as she continued to look, coming from what would have been the corner of the apartment building was a vehicle that was now airborne, if you will. This African-American mother and a couple of other people who were adults, African-American adults who were at that waiting pond, saw the terror and the graphic actions that led to the deaths of two human beings and the injuries of at least two others, if you will, African Americans, by the way. So we had two Caucasian, and we had at least three African Americans. The two that were injured, their identity has just been kind of lost. No one says anything about them. The newspaper has not written anything, and et cetera. But the wife of this gentleman, he becomes very crucial as we move into what happened and what his very, very, very significant role is. As he turned, as his wife screamed, they saw the vehicle in the air, saw it hit the utility pole, wooden utility pole, and then saw it crash to the ground, crushing and instantly killing Mr. Odom. At about the same time as it was hitting, they observed a body sliding across the alley in a east to west direction, ultimately hitting a cyclone fence, a 6-foot fence. A Caucasian woman, small in stature. It was one of the reasons that so many of you that Friday night at the scene thought, as you were being pushed back and cussed out by the police, that you thought that a child had been hit and killed. The Caucasian woman riding as passenger had flown from the car, tearing most of her arm off, her right arm, if I'm not mistaken. We had a chance to, and it's not anything that one is comfortable talking about, chance on Saturday to see the graphic depth pictures of both individuals, the Caucasian woman slung up across, sliding across the alley, losing her arm and hitting the cyclone fence and dying instantly. And Mr. Odom, who the truck came down on, smashing him, breaking his back and et cetera, and killing him instantly. In the meanwhile, another African-American gentleman had been hit. He was some way or another walking out of the parking lot. Truck hit him, knocked him unconscious to the ground, and a second African-American was also injured, if you will. Now, the unmarked Minneapolis police car with the gang unit officer slides to a stop. The officer immediately jumps from his automobile, drawing his gun. According to the audio that we have heard, as well as witnesses that gave statements and testimony to us on Saturday afternoon, at the site of this tragedy, the officer, his weapon drawn, said, "Stay on the ground, stay on the ground." He used profanity and et cetera, and maybe even used some racial reflections, though at that point he realized that as the dust cleared, that he was looking next to the fence at a Caucasian person who I don't know if he really knew if it was a male or a female. Now, the other thing that happened, and it was interesting and it was sad, dismissal of black witnesses during this tragedy this past Friday, because as he was screaming and hollering and waving his gun, African Americans and others were saying to him, "Your car, your car, your car." And what had happened, and which has been very well covered up and is not in the incident reports, etc., the officer looked back and his automobile, which he had not put fully in gear, had began to roll back down the alley and actually hit the fence, the same fence a little further up, obviously, that the young Caucasian female was to die laying next to. His car, his automobile, his undercover car, back through that fence. And in fact, on Saturday, we had the opportunity to watch the workers that were brought in repair that fence. though we understand no pictures were ever taken by CSI. Also, there is now video after, and as additional police began to rush to the scene and et cetera, and the crowd was trying to get close, that a police supervisor, a person identified as a supervisor, probably a sergeant of the 4th Precinct, indicated that that damn car and some other profanity, move that car, move it now. Now, that is kind of scary, my friends, because this is now a crime scene, if you will, as we move into the 9 o'clock and the first half hour of tonight's program. This was a crime scene, and that police undercover vehicle, black car with tainted windows, should have not been moved until the CSI people and others arrived to take pictures and et cetera, because the car tore parts of the fence down, and that's what the workers were working on. Now, let me tell you, one of the TV stations that got the footage the next day, based on a conversation with witnesses, Samuel King, African-American reporter for KMSP Channel 9 here in Minneapolis, was ultimately told on Saturday afternoon that he needed to take a picture of the white workmen who were finishing up on that part of the fence, the Sacco fence, that had been damaged by the officer's undercover car, which he did not properly put in gear, if you will, roll through the fence, damaging it, causing it to have to be portions of it to be replaced. Now, as people attempted to come close and even give assistance, squad cars were arriving. Now, you have to understand, this area is also under construction both ways. Penn is under construction, if you will, right up to the bus stop. And, of course, Laurie is under construction, if you will, up to that particular point where the two streets intersect. And so the police were now screaming and demanding that the crowd, which was, you know, 95% African-American, get their behind, you know, actually get their asses back. Officers were very agitated, if you will, very angry. I don't know why they were angry at the African-Americans. You know what I'm saying? They had suffered casualties, you know. And what then happened was other police came. Well, during the course, let's say around 8:55, you know, a number of high-ranking officers emerged because there had also been reports that shots had been fired. Of course, this is an area, all of North Minneapolis is a place where shots are fired on a continuous basis, if you will. And so a ranking member of the Minneapolis Police Department came up, and the reason we know this is because we were a part of an electronic intercept, and so we heard conversations, and we heard women and mothers and et cetera screaming and hollering because they still thought that that body laying next to the fence was a child, if you will. But again, it was a small, statured, white female, now deceased, if you will. And so there was all of this friction, if you will. There was the demand that Negroes back up, and ultimately the crowd was pushed almost an entire half a block back, even past the liquor store, if you will. But there were some individuals who were a part of the electronic intercept team that were briefing yours truly on the situation. They had a lot of information correct. For example, the color of the blankets that were put over the two deceased, if you will, Mr. Odom and the young lady who I assume that today in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the police finally released the name. But there began an argument, and we're going to spend 3 or 4 minutes on this because it has everything to do with the credibility of the investigation and et cetera. Oh, by the way, the investigation is being handled by the traffic division of the Mass Police Department, who are legendary with how long they take to reconstruct and get a report out. It takes about a year, if you will. So someone is buying time, if you will, significant time, particularly because of the issue of liability. Mr. Oldham should not have died in that backyard, in that alley. He should not have died. There should not have been a pursuit, if you will. The pursuit should have been broken off. But you're in a neighborhood with a heavy concentration of colored people, black people, African Americans. So what the hell? Nobody really cares, if you will. And so that particular night, as we said, around 8:50 up until about 9 o'clock, African-Americans are saying the police caused this. There was a pursuit. Nope, 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 there's no pursuit. You people are wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. And there was a specific part of the conversation which has been electronically recorded and et cetera, and it is in the possession of individuals within the African-American community, in which a gentleman said the following to a high-ranking white Minneapolis police officer. He said, man, I know what I'm talking about, man. You can't BS me. You know, my wife and I watched this chase at start at 24th and Queen, man. I'm telling you, it was the police behind that van, okay? Now, what has happened is that that was part two of the continuing chase. You see, when the chase first began, it was the African-American brother whose car had been hit who was giving chase, but he was stopped by the police, who demanded to know why was he chasing this white woman. Now, at the part that was being discussed, as we said earlier in this broadcast, a call went out that there was a caravan, automobile that was still running around the neighborhood in quote-unquote dangerous speeds, children, babies, and et cetera, in the street. Now, remember what we said to you earlier in this program, that the Minneapolis Star Tribune gave the secret away when they reported some aspects of the incident report, which they thought was favorable to the policing of the police, and indicated that the woman who is now I assume she has finally been given a cell. I'm not sure. She may be still under police guard, according to the white newspaper, at North Memorial Hospital in the small city of Robbinsdale. So what this gentleman had actually seen was part two of the chase, but now we had a undercover, unmarked Minneapolis police car in pursuit of the caravan, automobile, if you will. And they then go back pretty much the same route that the woman and the African-American who was attempting to get her to stop after she had hit his car and taken off continues. That is what you call fate. And that is so dangerous, if you will. And lives were lost. Because when that second chase started with the Minneapolis Police Department in pursuit, there was no one who was dead. There had been no vehicular homicide. The young lady who was riding with her friend who brought about her death, and Mr. Odoms, who was working on an automobile for a neighbor, for a friend, because Mr. Odom only lived a couple blocks away, and had gained an outstanding reputation as one hell of a mechanic, if you will. And so it was a deja vu, but it was a deja vu with a significant level of fatality that was about to happen. Now, by Saturday, the police were putting out a number of different versions of what had happened, but what they did not know is that a black journalist, not Mr. King of KMSP, but the gentleman that is narrating this program, went to the scene. Something said to me, check the scene out. See what is going on. It was, my friends, I'm telling you, it was the spirit of Mr. Odom that was saying, please, somebody, go back. Seek evidence. Seek information. Do not allow my spirit to die in this matter. And even the spirit of the Caucasian woman who was also killed, if you will, through the actions of her friends. And the kind of conversations went on. I've never seen so many. Oh, that's right. I've seen 39 minutes of video from that scene, including the deceased. Horrifying, horrifying, particularly the young Caucasian woman whose body was ripped apart as it flew from that car, sliding across that concrete and hitting that fence, if you will. And so in the course of my examination, I was approached by a young African-American who knew who I was. He had seen me, his wife specifically, had seen me a number of times on my television programs because I have television and radio programs and a column here in Minneapolis. He sought me out, this young man, this young African-American being as responsible, a young man who the previous night had said to a reporter, as well as police officers, that he had video of the entire situation, the entire incident, the tragedy, and et cetera, and all the police could tell him was to get his black ass back over that tape, whatever that was supposed to mean. I mean, actually, at one point, actually put their hands on him, which could have caused a conflict. But this young man is very mature in his thinking and his decision-making. And he drew back, but he continued to photograph, if you will. And so we, on Saturday afternoon at about 3:35, on a hot, hot Saturday degrees, 97 degrees, heat index 104, 105 here in our beloved Shangri-La. And it was a sobering moment, series of moments for yours truly, to see these pictures of the carnage, if you will, to see an African-American unconscious laying in the grass adjacent to the parking lot of the liquor store, not unconscious, still in the hospital. The other individual somewhere beyond him, more towards Penn Avenue, unconscious also. But in the meanwhile, I say to Samuel King of KMSP, a black reporter, that you need to take pictures of what those gentlemen are doing down there repairing that fence, and maybe that'll give you a better understanding of what hit that fence. What hit that fence was an undercover police car. Now, all during Saturday, all during Sunday, the community was told that there was no pursuit, that the police did not show up until after, long after the accident and et cetera. African-Americans as a community were being accused of being nothing more than liars, if you will. And so that is how it has continued to play out. And when the white female driver of the vehicle that took lives appeared in court on Monday, the system seemed to go to great lengths to make sure that she was as unidentifiable as possible. As we said, it wasn't until Tuesday's edition of your Minneapolis Star Tribune that some portions of this was identified, and yet as early as Friday night, African Americans, of what had happened, and were being dismissed, if you will, as irrelevant, if you will, as of having no understanding of what the hell it was that they saw. Mr. Odom's family, which it took a long time to them to give notice, is preparing a lawsuit, and I wish them the best, my friends. I wish them the best. Because Mr. Odom certainly has at least $5 million coming to his estate. He should not have died in that alley. Just so that we are balanced, because we had almost a similar tragedy here just earlier in that week involving three young, beautiful, white children, if you will. And the papers have not hesitated to show, regrettably, the black man, Mr. Powell, who was driving his SUV in a high-speed chase involving the Minnesota State Highway Patrol. one of those three young white children will maybe never walk again. We only can give our prayers and speak to the positive, if you will. In the case of the African Americans, if you will, the one that died, the two that was injured, and et cetera, and those African Americans who on last Friday night cried out that a cover-up was already in play and that there had been a high-speed pursuit and et cetera, and they were being told, no, 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 you people are wrong. There was no police pursuit, if you will. Shame. Shame, my friends. And so to that young lady, I think her name was Gloria, who called me from Omaha, Nebraska, who was in our beloved city on that occasion, who is an attorney who raised the question to us, friends and relatives that heard our podcast on yesterday on MTN, the Minneapolis Television Network. And to those gentlemen from Des Moines, Iowa, if you will, we thank you for making inquiry and for asking for clarification about a high-speed pursuit that led to the deaths of two individuals and the injuries of at least three more, if you will. We do not expect anything to happen as we wrap, as we move towards the final 15 minutes of tonight's program. We don't expect anything really to happen. We understand how the game is played. But now, that brings us to the final part of tonight's program. The troubling aspect, and we invite you, those of you that did not hear our podcast of yesterday from the corporate studios of MTN, we invite you to join us on Channel 16, Community Television, City of Minneapolis, as we talked in terms of the fact that there is something going on in which the future of Chief Nadala Arredondo, who's only been chief for, 6 months, is, quote-unquote, in jeopardy. We are on the verge here in the city of Minneapolis of having a situation where a mayor who is being misled, if you will, if not totally, though he had been a member for 4 years of the Minneapolis City Council, that he is in a situation in which he is being misled and fed bad and misinformation by those who were first committed. If it had not been, we say this tonight, on these programs, as we said it on the program podcast yesterday and will be shown at its regular time on Sunday on Minneapolis Television Network, if it had not been for Bob Johnson, a longtime city council member and a long time, I think it was 11 years, president of the Minneapolis City Council, the tenure of her beloved mother. If it had not been for Barb Johnson holding together that group of youth Minneapolis City Council persons who wanted to deny Nadala Arredondo the opportunity to become the first African-American chief in the city of Minneapolis in its storied history and et cetera. But we now have reverted back to the place. I say that tonight. We said it on our podcast and our television program, our podcast, which ran live yesterday, our television program, which aired on Sunday, that there are those who in the court of Caesar plot the death of Caesar. In this case, Caesar is Nadala Arredondo. A very decent person, a quiet-mannered individual, if you will, a man who has not been about the volatility, quote-unquote, of local politics. But the plan is afoot, my friends. And one of the people that is well-versed, because this person demanded from the chief an explanation on why the chief has not been standing stronger for the base of Minneapolis police officers and et cetera, particularly white officers who maintained that this black chief, and it was expected. Some of us talked about it as happening when Rondo was up for a quote-unquote appointment to finish out the 1 year and some month term of former Chief Janae Harto, who served this city well. And in fact, for those of you that are listening and saying, well, what did you do? What was your well? I was one of those that stepped up and testified in behalf of Chief Arredondo. As a historian and a longtime activist and former head of the Civil Rights Commission and the Federal Court Oversight Group for the Minneapolis Fire Department, yes, when the Minneapolis Fire Department was in federal receivership, yes, it was this commentator who served for 11 years as the chairman of the committee reporting directly to the federal court. Boy, I can tell you, that was one of the best times of dealing, quote-unquote, with snakes, vermin, and et cetera, because we had to report only to the judge of the court, the beloved, well-respected, now deceased Robert Renner. Oh, for those of you that want to run around finding, go into the archives of the Federal District Court of the state of Minnesota. That whole thing that started with a case called Carter v. Gallagher. Carter was an African-American who they said, you can't be a firefighter boy. Gallagher was the chairman of the Minneapolis Civil Service Commission. We say all that as we move into the last minutes of tonight's program, and we appreciate you taking the time to listen, if you will. Hopefully our associate will be back in a week or a couple weeks or whatever, that we will be able to receive your phone calls and any examination that you may want to make of us with regards to both of these stories, the cover-up in the deaths of two people, and in the quote-unquote master plan to undermine and to encourage the mayor of the city of Minneapolis to lose confidence in Chief Madera Arredondo. Oh, some of us know all about that group of y'all out there in the 5th Precinct, if you will. Some of you are the same ones that passed bogus information to the fiancé of Justine Dunham, the Caucasian woman, the Australian who was shot and tragically by Mohammed Nord, a Somali police officer who, if people had their way, he'd be swinging from a light post. Now, there are things tonight that are wrong in this city. There are things tonight that are dangerous in this city. There are things tonight that causes an imbalance in the reputation. As I stated in a quote in the Minneapolis Star Tribune a couple Saturdays ago, you know, Minneapolis, the state of Minnesota, prides itself on being in the forefront of fairness, if you will, and honesty, and et cetera. Well, they are not, including the paper, because they have really been on the attack. Some of the things that they have done and said raises serious concerns about yellow journalism. But also, if you want to know just how bad it is and how Chief Arredondo feels like a man standing alone on an island, maybe you can get Federation President Bob Crow to speak up, step out. It was not Bob Crow, president of the Police Federation, that initiated, but his rank and file was demanding that this African-American chief be confronted with the fact that he wasn't standing tall for the majority of his officers / white officers. And this chief, an African-American, had to explain to this president, a Caucasian, what he had been told by the office of the mayor with respect to how the ducks would walk and what kind of quack quack would be heard. It is unfair, my friend. Arredondo has served with distinction. He has served with honesty. His problem is he is just a very kind-hearted individual. And that is not what the unholy five of the Minneapolis City Council once. For those of you that say you pay attention, go back and take a look at some of the newspaper stories as we move into the last 4 minutes of tonight's program. Look at some of the news stories and some of the suggestions that were being made by writers for the Minneapolis Star Tribune that really people weren't comfortable that the man who was assistant chief, Arredondo, who was going to be moved up to chief as it pertains to the pecking order, was not the person for the job. And read my own column in praising the strength of the city council under then council president Barb Johnson in holding the coalition together and giving us in the history of this department the first African-American. By the way, the city of St. Paul, our sister city across the river, has had three African-Americans as police chief in the last 20 years, if you will. And so tonight we think that it is only appropriate. Do with it what you may and what you will, but I know, damn it, you are going to be made aware as a listening audience of these two specific situations, which speak volumes, tragically, to the strength of the African-American leadership community. If we lose Chief Arredondo, it will be a sad day. But if there is no justice for Mr. Odom and the deceased young Caucasian woman killed in, then we've all lost out. In any attempt to make anybody believe that folks are about the business of standing up and being counted on will forever go out the window once again. Last Friday, that was a pursuit, my friends. That wasn't just a happenstance that an undercover gang unit police officer so pumped up that as he watched people die in front of him, he could think about nothing but getting his gun out of his holster and demanding that people stay down. They were already down, officer. In fact, two of them were down permanently for life. They were dead. I don't know what it was that you thought that you saw, but things were so volatile in your mind that you didn't even stop your car and put it in gear. And the car rolled down the alley, tearing down fences, and et cetera. Yet, police told African-Americans and other citizens that night at the site of the death of two people and the injuries of two others that there was no police pursuit, if you will. You black folks are just absolutely wrong and incorrect. We're into the last 90 seconds. Appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope that you took notes. We hope that you recorded, because we have no problem whatsoever of standing by our decorations. And we have to say that some of the best photography that I've ever seen was that young African-American and his wife taking those pictures that night, even though he was threatened. And a number of TV stations indicated that they would not, quote unquote, interview him or use the video footage in which he see, which shows the actual deaths of two individuals. It shouldn't happen. Stay strong. His hand needs to be upon the shoulder of that city called Minneapolis in the state of Minnesota. God bless you, black folks, and those who want to work closely. And we hope for the best for the current chief of police, a man, quote unquote, of great passion, a sense of fairness, a man who is all about trying to do the right thing. But he's on his way out. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We will see you next week. Good night.